Ladies and gentlemen, thinkers and debaters, fence sitters and firebrands, welcome to the Big Top of Talk, the high-flying, death-defying, no-holds-barred spectacle of ideas. This is Common Ground, where left meets right, up meets down, and common sense fights to survive. We're here to cut through the noise, bridge the divide, and maybe, just maybe, find a little middle ground along the way. So grab your coffee, buckle up, and keep your hands inside the conversation at all times. Because it's time for open minds, open dialogue, and maybe even a little common ground for the common good. Here are your hosts, Melissa Lucas and Scott Goodman.
Hello and good morning, Scott Goodman here, and welcome to another episode of Common Ground on KNTR Talk Radio, 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free, and catch us here every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Well, listen, before I get to my monologue about today's topic, I must first address the events of the last few days. Our President Donald J. Trump, with negotiator Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, worked together with Israel to support with the support of numerous Arab leaders to sign a peace agreement with Hamas to stop the war and secure the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas and other militant groups. This miraculous achievement is the greatest peace treaty signed in recent memory, for me at least, hearkening back to Jimmy Carter bringing Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin together for a peace treaty. Now it is time to heal and rebuild, and maybe the Middle East can finally find a little common ground. The topic today, for the second time, is discussing public education, vouchers, impact, recent changes, guidelines, curriculum that guide our children's education. We, like myself, who are parents of school-age children, have been seen the sweeping changes in the way that the kids are educated, what is taught and what is not. We have a responsibility as parents to oversee our children's education. But many leave it to the teachers, schools, and school boards and ignore the changes that mold the minds of our kids that may affect the future and the future of our nation. Hopefully we can find this is a worthy topic, and I think we will be able to find some common ground. Melissa, how about letting your listeners know about our guest today and the staff that makes the show happen, and let our listeners know how to reach out to us on Common Ground, featured on KNTR Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. If you want to give us a call, it's 928-854-5687, or you can text in at 928-727-5566. We would love to hear from you. All right, I'm going to do a quick shout-out to our ground sponsors, Blonzy Steakhouse, Golden Valley Auto Parts and Hardware, Annie's Thrift Shop, Toff Terp AZ, Martin Swanee, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Kia, and Neat Pool and Supply. And remember, if you're traveling through the tri-state, you can listen on 106.3 in Golden Valley and Kingman, 106.5 in Laughlin, Bullhead, and Mojave Valley, Needles, and 106.7 right here in Lake Havasu. In-house today, we have our producer, Marissa June. We have Red Bull Ronnie, the co-creator. And Paul Lavoie, our operations manager, is in the house as well. Our guest today is Dr. Terry Leyva Ruiz. Welcome to the show, or Ruiz. Welcome to the show. Today's topic, as Scott had said, is education, and I'm going to start right off the bat with a question for you.
Okay.
So, as the government shutdown potentially becomes one of the longest in history, how should education priorities factor into negotiations? And do you support continued resolutions to keep school funded?
Well, I think we're seeing the impact of the shutdown. Not only the recent shutdown, but also ongoing impacts to public education across our country. Schools started the school year not knowing if they were going to have the funding needed to provide after-school programs or staff for some of the models.
What about Head Start?
Oh, Head Start has been devastated across the country and has impacted so many families.
So many families
That's and children.
I don't know if the listeners all realize, but Head Start is for lower-income families. It is income-based. Mm-hmm. I was I told Ronnie that. He said he did not know that. And I said, oh, I'm pretty sure. And so that might be one of the ones that's really, really affected.
And think about the impact that that has, not only on the families and their, you know, economic impact, but on the children and preparing them for success when they finally start school and kindergarten. So Head Start programs are incredibly important to the families and to children and to our country. And so having those eliminated, we're going to be feeling those impacts for a long time.
Right. And those are the ones that need it the most.
Absolutely.
Well, there's something else also to consider that a lot of people don't think about is the supplement for children for their food.
Mm-hmm.
To have a good meal every day, mm-hmm. guaranteed at school.
Yeah.
You know, and they're making cuts after cuts after cuts, and it makes it impossible. I remember back in the Bush administration, he was really big on Head Start.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big proponent of Head Start and made sure that it was well-funded because he saw the dramatic impact it had on those families.
It's huge impact. And so I was at a school recently in Flagstaff, and if the children don't have the money on their account to pay for lunch, the school's going to feed the child no matter what, which means then the school district is left with a very large bill so that the children make sure that they get a meal, a hot meal every single day, and at the school's expense, and that's not built into their budget. That's something they have to make sure that they're able to allocate it at the time.
And at the same time, with the budgets being cut, the it's a big impact on the schools and the
huge.
School districts. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something else to consider with the budgetary cuts that are being proposed and the elimination of the DOE potentially, mm-hmm. There's a huge upheaval in the entire circus that's going on when it comes to how to deal with education, how to fund education, whether it should be the states, the federal government. As we discussed before the show, even getting private entities mm-hmm. to come in and participate in the education of our children or support of the people who are educating.
Right. So right now in Arizona, roughly on average, 12% of a school's budget comes from the federal government. But that's an average. We met a school district, Mayor, Arizona, tiny school district on the way to Prescott. A third of their budget.
Shit, that was me. Sorry.
A third of their budget comes from the federal government. And so, you know, impacts, if federal resources go away, then who's going to make up that difference? Is the state, do we have the resources in our state? Well, not right now, we don't. But is there an opportunity to reallocate? Absolutely. But we'd have to have a big conversation as a state. And right now, we're not having those conversations. So here's an opportunity to, and I'll put a plug here, for an educator to be at that table for myself as a 35-year career educator to be part of the plan.
And you are running to be?
I am running to be the next state superintendent of public instruction.
And you have the experience, mm-hmm. and you have the drive to do the job.
I do.
The duties of a superintendent of public education and public instruction is pretty daunting.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of reports to deal with. And a lot of paperwork to deal with.
What's your political affiliation? Are you Democrat? Or?
I'm running as a Democrat, yes. Uh-huh.
So in regards to your official duties, mm-hmm. It's going to be difficult for you because of the financial situation. And I was discussing with another educator, a friend of mine who's a former school principal, about raising a tax, an education tax. Now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Arizona currently folded into something else as an education tax. Is that correct?
Well, we had the Prop 123, which was a voter-approved 10-year initiative.
But it expired.
It expired, and the legislature was using that as a tool, as a political tool, to enshrine the empowerment scholarship account vouchers into the state constitution. And here's where we really, really, we want to keep the politics out of the classroom. We want to make sure that we're focused on educating our children. The teachers do not have the resources that they need to start the school year. Many of our educators are starting with crowdfunding to get the basic supplies that they need, paper, pencils, crayons, you know, hand sanitizers.
Well, every year, in my experience with raising three kids who went through school here in town, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the year, and especially in elementary school, mm-hmm. we would have a hit list of things to
yeah.
supply for the and donate to the school.
Absolutely. Right. Parents yeah. are given a list.
They're given a list.
But what if you couldn't afford that?
Well, other parents can make it up, and they have.
Mm-hmm.
But the other question for me is that going back to Head Start, if people can't afford to get the materials that they need for school, mm-hmm. and they're not being fed, they have a strategic disadvantage mm-hmm. and a clear disadvantage with the other children who are well provided for.
Yeah.
And it's not the problem of the parents. We have, you know, single parents that are struggling to mm-hmm. get by. But going back to the taxation, the only solution really is to raise the money and is to stave off huge cuts and a deficit is to put a small percentage tax in, and everybody's going to vote against it. Not everybody, but a large percentage. I don't think it would pass.
Well, one of the things we know from polling around the state is, regardless, and this is the beautiful part, and I love being on this show, Common Ground, because education is the common ground for all of us. And what we're finding is, regardless of political affiliation, parents really do care. Voters care about public education. They want their children to be well educated and have a pipeline to either pursue a career in technical education degree, to go right out into the world of work, which, you know, having a strong workforce pipeline. But parents really want that for their kids, and they're willing. You know, Prop 123 is a great example. Passing Proposition 123 is a great example of how they are willing to pay a tax for it.
So in the city of Lake Havasu, for years, they tried to pass a $25 million grant for upgrades in the schools. As you well know, Marissa, the air conditioning systems in the high school didn't mm-hmm. work so good. Well, it took them years and years and years, and they finally passed it with the help of organization Red for Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And it passed, and that allowed the purchase of updated computer system, touch screens, whiteboards, you know, the things that were needed for our kids' education. But once again, these things sunset. And when technology changes and upgrades, everything needs to be revamped.
Yeah, and technology changes really quickly. So talking about facilities for just a second, we know that the Arizona Superior Court just ruled it is unconstitutional how Arizona has not been funding the capital and facility needs of our schools around the state. So quite literally, you know, you were saying that your conditioning is a little so-so in the high school.
Right.
Well, we were up in Page, Arizona, where literally there are hydraulic lifts holding up the ceiling of the gym because the beams have severed. They're still on swamp coolers, and the air conditioners are so old that when a part breaks, they can't even
get a
replacement part. And so the facilities thing, so the Arizona Superior Court has ruled that it's been unconstitutional to the tune of like $2 billion.
Where did they get the money?
Where is that going to come from?
Exactly. Well, as a state, the question would always be, have we prioritized education for our children? Have we prioritized funding, or have we been little by little underfunding public education for decades now? And
well,
I think the record shows that we have been, which is why we are last in the nation in per pupil funding.
Well, it's even worse than that, actually. My interpretation of the way things are is you have so many tasks to accomplish in reference to the education of the kids. It's not just, hey, we have classrooms, we have books, we have computers and all that. It's the infrastructure. And the infrastructure is woefully underfunded. And if the kids, my son at high school had to be picked up from school because the air conditioning system
mm-hmm.
failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was middle of summer, and they
yeah.
had, you know, middle of the heat season, and they had to be picked up. But the problem I see, and that's why you as a candidate understand this, you have to have a wide range of knowledge and experience to be able to navigate through the educational aspects, the infrastructure, the funding, the food, etc. But we're going to pick up that on our next segment here on Common Ground at 106.7, 5, and 3.
Voice of the Free.
Catch you in a minute.
Peace.
ground, and I believe that our engineer, Marissa June, has something to say about our sponsors.
Yes, I do. All right, we're going to give a shout-out to our sponsors before we continue. First up, we have Belonzi Steakhouse, mouth-watering steaks and a breakfast menu that has everyone talking. Whether it's date night or brunch with friends, great taste is always on the menu. Belonzi's is where Havasu eats, off London Bridge Road in Desert Hills. Then we have Golden Valley Auto Parts and Hardware. They are a small-town store with the biggest auto and hardware selection in the area. Find what you want online at goldenvalleyhardware.com and pick it up in-store today, just off Bowie Road in Golden Valley. And Annie's Thrift Shop. Shopping at Annie's Thrift Shop isn't just about great deals, it's about giving back. Every purchase helps support local charities, making your find more than just a bargain. It's a blessing. Annie's Thrift Store, thrifting with a purpose.
Awesome. Thank you, Marissa. All right, you can text us in at 928-727-5566 or call in at 928-854-5687. During the break, I asked my co-host, who knows randomly just about everything, and our guest today, I was curious about schools on military bases, because a school on a military base, I don't know. I didn't know. Do they have the same rules as regular schools that were like Lake Havasu Elementary or whatever? And how are they going to be affected by the government shutdown? And what are their test scores? How are they doing overall? So I asked AI during the commercial, and it says that as a whole, the military schools are doing 14 to 25 points higher on testing in all. I mean, we're talking fourth grade. It does fourth grade reading and math. It does different examples, eighth grade reading and math. And the military schools are head and shoulders above the public schools.
How about that?
And they are funded by different entities.
Hmm. Well, that's indicative of the gap between government and public sector. If only a small percentage of the Arizona state budget for schools is what, 12 to 14%?
Of the federal government.
Federal government. Mm-hmm. And 100% mm-hmm. is going to the federal government, goes to the military schooling.
I got a text in here. It says, Scott mentioned the experience needed to run our public schools properly. How does your experience in education compare with that of Tom Horn, our current superintendent of public education?
Instruction,
yes.
Great question. Well, I am a career educator. I spent 25 years in the classroom teaching mathematics across all grade levels, middle school, high school, and at the college, and 10 years as an executive leader, finishing as the president of one of the largest community colleges in the state of Arizona, Glendale Community College, where I served as a president for 6 years. In fact, Glendale Community College is larger than the whole Arizona Department of Education. So I not only have classroom experience, but executive level experience. I know how to run a large organization.
Wonderful. And thank you for texting. I appreciate it. So I have a couple of really strange, specific questions. ACT. In the high schools in ninth grade, when my son is preparing for his first ACT Aspire test, and then how does that count in your record? Because when you're a junior, you take the real ACT test that gets you into colleges and high schools, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So the first generation, is that like a practice test or an assessment test?
It's like a practice test, and it prepares students, because a lot of those tests, those are tests in endurance. They're long tests, a lot of questions, and so give it early, let the students get a feel for what it's like, and then of course the data gets tracked. How is your student doing? That probably gets information to elite schools, so they know that there's a high flyer here coming up. And just prepare students.
Right. Mm-hmm. So based on your experiences that you've had, obviously policy, standards, curriculum, things like that, you have down pretty good. Mm-hmm. The question I have is the stakeholder relations, the relationships with the boards, with the teachers, with the parents. Mm-hmm. And my personal experience, 18 plus years of children in school, I've never once heard from my director of our superintendent of public instruction directly, either by email or by in person or in a meeting. So the outreach that you would have to have if you're voted into the office, are you going to try to focus in on the interchange and the interaction between your office, your people that work for you, the teachers. We need a better liaison. We need a better set of communication outreaches for the parents and for the children. Is that something that you're prepared to do?
Absolutely. And coming on your show is part of that, so that, you know, there's a real person behind this role as a superintendent of public instruction. It's working with our local superintendents and teachers and families. It's working with the county superintendents, and then of course across the board. So it's an opportunity. There should be communication. You should have received communication
Nothing.
From your and superintendent.
I'm going to tell you why I believe that was the case. I believe that the monumental job of this office there's not enough hours in the day for you to do what you really need to do. You have to have a quality staff. Mm-hmm. You have to have the support of the community. But to give yourself the opportunity, for example, to go to different districts and have a meeting at the high school and meet with the parents and tell them what exciting things are coming up, what your expectations are of the parents, the teachers. Mm-hmm. I've never heard from one. So is that something you're prepared to do?
Absolutely. So I have a commitment, even in this campaign, to hit every single county in Arizona, 15 counties. We are one county away.
Nice.
We'll get that in December. But I would do that same commitment as a superintendent. Within the first year, I will go to every single county. And there's lots of ways that we can communicate. We could have a monthly Zoom meeting where parents can be part of this conversation. It could be if I'm going to be here
right.
in Mojave County and I'm going to be in Lake Havasu, then let's invite the families and community in to have a conversation with the superintendent.
Well,
it's
something. It is important, and that's why I brought it up. Mm-hmm. Do we have another?
I do have, and this is for you, Doctor. What is the first thing that you would do if you win the election?
Great question. So I care about students and their success. And one of the things that's happening right now is the current superintendent is suing our schools.
Why?
Because he disagrees with the ideology of offering dual language instruction. Dual language programs across the country have great success, and here in Arizona, great success as well. But there's, because of the difference in ideology and a difference of interpretation, the result is to sue our schools instead. At a tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
For legal defense.
For legal defense. I mean, this is ridiculous. Why are we suing?
Is the school requiring that children learn Spanish? Like, you have to take Spanish to graduate?
No, not at all.
So what's the issue then?
Well, no, I'm going to back up a little bit. So
you never took Spanish?
I believe personally that it puts a huge burden on the schools to have to be able to find, especially with a limited pool of bilingual teachers.
Yeah, schools that are doing it, though, are having great success.
I agree that they would have success, but what I'm concerned about, or what I believe to be the case, is that there's, a limited pool of people who could fit that bill, number one, being a good educator and bilingual. Mm-hmm. You know, in smaller counties, more other counties, rural counties, maybe, I don't know. But the biggest problem I see is that if you're in a classroom for, let's say, 45 minutes, and it's bilingual and dual language, does that not take away and split time in respect to educating our children?
No.
Tell me how it works.
Yeah, no, the dual language programs, it's considered a 50-50 model, and it is not only to help non-English speakers learn English while also ensuring that their academic progress continues, but more importantly or more interestingly, it helps monolingual English speakers learn another language. So let me give you an example of how this works. It could be one day is all English and the next day is all Spanish.
Okay.
And that allows the student who needs to learn English to learn English while also ensuring they're still learning math and history and reading, and they're still learning their academic subjects.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so I was at a school recently, and 90% of the children in the school are monolingual English speakers whose parents see the value of learning another language, and so they're there to learn. And I watched children in kindergarten write full-on sentences in Spanish, and then I saw eighth graders doing presentations they were studying different countries, and they were doing their presentations in Spanish completely fluent. And for many of those children, it's not the second language, that's their third language.
So what I guess kind of what I'm trying to clarify is that you have a limited time in each classroom session every day. You have a period, whatever period that is. And if each classroom, biology, science, English, etc., if they are all bilingual and they're all teaching people with two languages, there's a limited window of time. So you said that one day it would be Spanish, maybe one day it would be English. Mm-hmm. Now, the kids who don't speak any Spanish and the instruction is being conducted in Spanish, yes, they're going to probably pick things up. But what are those students doing during that time if they're not understanding what the teacher is saying? What are the students' obligations? What is their task? What is their work that they're doing if they can't understand what the teacher's saying that day?
So there's the beauty. There's some requirements. You can't just come into an eighth grade class, A, and all of a sudden be part of the dual language program. This is you start as kindergarten children and you come your way through. So that's one thing. Second of all, not all schools do it that manner, and it's not required everywhere, and that goes back to local control. Does that school district want to offer a dual language program? So not all districts offer it.
So it's,
they don't have to.
So sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but so in a school like the Lake Havasu High School, for example, if they had a dual language class, when they're signing up for their classes or being assigned their classes during the year, they're opting in or opting out. And if they opt in, does it give the full range of instructions? Because they can't have every class being bilingual. Right. So, for example, do they have the same opportunities for quality education, or do they have a limited number of classrooms, a limited number of teachers, which pigeonholes them into just that narrow range of instruction?
No, they're going to teach the full range because that's the state standard. You got to meet the state standards. And I would imagine that a school district isn't going to just offer a random class, you know, a dual language class. It's part of a whole curriculum. It's part of a whole program.
So it does start in many districts. It would start
very
in kindergarten.
Young. Yeah, okay. Very young.
So you move here from Idaho, and you won't be put in that class?
No.
Okay.
No, parents opt
in.
Into it.
You have to opt in.
Parents opt in. But dual language programs, we could have a whole show on just dual language programs.
Yeah. We'll
But the reality, though, is that to answer the question, because schools are being sued and taking away valuable resources and costing taxpayer dollars, we would stop those lawsuits day one.
Yeah,
we're not
I don't agree with the administrators suing schools, but we're going to be moving on to our break now, and we'll have another session right after this on KNTR Common Ground, KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
Catch you soon.
Missed your midterms and flunked shampoo. Well, at least you.
Welcome back to Common Ground, right here live on KNTR 106.7, 5 and 3, Voice of the Free. You can text in at 928-727-5566 or call in 928-854-KNTR. And Marissa, you got the rest of the sponsors
here? I do. I'm going to give a quick shout out to the last three of our sponsors that makes this show possible to bring to you. Starting with Top Turf AZ, the largest showroom in Havasu, unbeatable wholesale pricing and premium turf backed by warranty. Top Turf is your turf headquarters, where they will match or beat any local competitor's price guaranteed. Located at 92 North Lake Havasu Avenue. Martin Swanee, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Kia. Since 1985, Martin Swanee Kingman has been more than a dealership. It's a legacy built on honest deals and handshakes. Celebrating 40 years of doing right by folks one happy driver at a time. Off East Andy Devine in Kingman. And lastly, we have Neat Pool and Supply, serving Lake Havasu since 1970. From expert consultations to top-notch supplies and service, they've got everything for pools and spas. Family-owned and operated right in the heart of Havasu. It's where your backyard oasis begins. Located at 52 Scott Drive.
Appreciate it.
I did a little bit of research. You had mentioned the per-pupil spending. Mm-hmm. And so I was curious on how much the military schools get per pupil spending, because they are doing so much better than the mainstream out here. And it says that they get around $15,000 to $16,000 annually per pupil spending.
Wow.
So how much do our kids get here in public schools?
They're like 12.
We get about half of that. Per pupil funding is around $7,000, $8,000.
So per pupil.
Per pupil. And keep in mind also that the beauty of public schools is public schools are open for every single student.
Right.
Regardless of your, you know, if you have a disability, regardless of your needs, public schools accept everyone. And, wow, imagine if we invested $15,000, if we matched what
the military spends on their kids.
Imagine what we could do as a state.
I think they have a lot of fluff that is carved off as well.
Well, something to keep in mind, and we discussed this briefly for a while, I have this hearkening to reach out to the past where corporations, philanthropists would donate money to schools to build a stadium, to build a football field, to build a library. Mm-hmm. This is something that is not a precedent. It's something that has happened before. There's a history of private investment in public schools. So the question I have for you is, as a potential superintendent of public instruction, if somebody came to you knowing all the budgetary shortfalls and the deficiencies that we have in our schools, if some entity came to you and said, look, we're willing to spend annually an endowment of X, Y, and Z amount of money, would that be something that could be entertained or would be entertained in the betterment for the betterment of the kids?
Wow. Well, we have a text for you.
So what are your thoughts on that?
So I think that's a slippery slope. We'd have to be very careful and make sure that we keep the ideology out of the classroom, that we're focusing on school, on students and their outcomes and not political ideology or any other ideology. We want to make sure that we talk about common ground.
Right.
That's our common ground. I think that a lot of school districts have foundations, education foundations, and that's exactly to your point about donors coming in to support school needs.
Endowment funds that mm-hmm. would be administered over by the independent school districts themselves or the superintendent themselves.
There's usually a foundation
right.
that handles that.
So I guess we have a text.
We do. We have texts coming in, too, while I'm reading this one. This one's a little explosive. It says, your guest made a comment about valuable resources going to defend against a lawsuit. How does she feel about valuable resources going to educate children that do not belong in this country or illegal?
So there was a Supreme Court ruling. It's called the Plyler case, and the Supreme Court ruled that under the 14th Amendment, we, as the United States, will educate every child. We won't ask what their immigration status is. And we have a responsibility to educate children.
A legal responsibility.
It's a legal responsibility. And I would say a moral responsibility as well. And the Supreme Court made this ruling. And that's why we don't ask those questions. We educate the child.
No, I do understand that. And I thank you for your text on that one. But the follow-up on that for me would be, based on the fact that each school district has the right to follow core curriculum requirements and standards, as we talked about, do they have the right to ask for identification?
No.
They do not have that
no.
right. So a parent walks up to the desk at the school and mm-hmm. says, I want to register my kid.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to present identification. They don't have to do anything.
They just have to – sometimes they have to prove that they are resident in the district. Although Arizona has, you know, you can really go to any school you want to, but you might have to show that you are a resident in the district, and that could be, you know, a utility bill, that could be something
okay.
else that has an
so
address.
It's not like they need a driver's license.
No.
Do you have
like
to
that.
Show a vaccine card that your kid has been vaccinated?
That would be a school's requirement, so that's a good question. I don't know.
But you don't know?
I don't know.
So what's the next text?
So next text is, what is your position, doctor, on empowerment savings accounts?
The Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, the Universal Vouchers, probably a Universal Empowerment
Saving.
Scholarship.
Okay.
Yeah. So my opinion on that is that we are using taxpayer dollars. These accounts, we can't track where the money is going. We can't track who's teaching our children. We don't know what their academic progress is because of the way the Empowerment Scholarship Account, the vouchers, have been written into law. And it's costing Arizonans $1 billion a year out of our general fund to pay for unaccounted resources.
So if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head, I believe that the amount is approximately $1,700 per year per student?
Well, it's on average about $8,000 per student. But if you're a student with special needs, if your child has special needs, it could be upwards of $40,000. And so that's a really separate issue. I wouldn't want to take resources away from children with special needs.
I was referring to the tax credits that the parents would receive. But
well, that's a different question.
That's a different question. Yeah. I think we have another text.
Yes, you do.
You're a popular lady.
Yes.
That's good.
And how does the lady feel about bullying policy in AZ when the victim and the aggressor get the same punishment of 9 days suspension? The reason I ask is we took our son out of Havasu for being bullied. Same day we were there, six other parents were there for the same thing.
Wow. Well, I think bullying is a real issue across the country. And I think, well, so the question is going to be, well, what can we do? What are the resources that the schools need? And as I talk to principals and superintendents around the state, they're all saying the same thing. Our children are suffering. We need more counselors. We need more social workers in the schools to help our students understand and work through these big emotions that they're having that are coming out in these aggressive tactics. But the schools don't have the resources to hire counselors and social workers. And so because once again, Arizona is last in how we fund schools. We're not investing in our children. We're not investing in our schools so that the schools have the resources that they need, so that the children aren't bullied. We want to make sure that every child has access to a high-quality learning environment,
and
safe.
I do agree with you on that. Of course, we're beating the same drum on that one. But in regards to bullying, we have a middle school here in town, Thunderbolt, had some major issues with bullying. My son was involved in a separating two people from fighting in eighth grade. They recently eliminated or laid off a number of educators and administrators at the school and put in people that I actually know to try to revamp the programs and keeping people from fighting with each other and bullying each other. But I think it all goes back to the parents on that. I mean, if my kid would bully another kid and I knew about it, I'm sorry to say it this way, there'd be hell to pay in my home. This is unacceptable behavior,
right.
You know, and I would educate my children about that and try to keep them on a short leash. So I think that the liaison between the schools, the district, the administrators needs to be a cohesive mix where we're on the same page, working together.
Yeah.
You know, they had a meeting at the gymnasium at Thunderbolt, and not as many parents showed up as they should have, is all I can tell you. I believe we have more text, which is a good thing.
Yes, and Dr. Terry, how do you say that again?
Leyva Ruiz.
You are a very popular guest today. this one says there are over $7 billion in state trust for schools. What is the thought of your guest in releasing more funds for the schools, and explain to our listeners how the funding works?
So that question must be related to the state land trust. And the state land trust is overseen by the state treasurer. The current state treasurer is not wanting to release additional funds, but I know that there are other candidates who are open to looking at how we can use state land trust dollars to support and augment our schools.
And the state land trust is where we have dirt that we sell and give the money to the schools. And it's part of the way that Arizona was set up. We talked about this on the past show about how that was set up. I thought it was really neat. My husband and I were actually talking about that today. We were driving to the show, and there's all this land, the shoreline, and I just was trying to imagine what that would be like if it was ever developed.
But here's where the problem lies. Let's say, for example, we have a budgetary shortfall for education, and the land trust agrees to sell off and produce funds to help augment the shortfalls in the budget. Well, that's a temporary solution, and it will only last a short window of time. And then what happens after that? They do it again, and they deplete to where over a number of years, the land trust doesn't exist anymore because we need to find a different solution.
Right. We're going to run out of dirt eventually.
We're going to run out of dirt. We're going to run out of money.
Right.
And that goes back to, the federal budget situation and the anticipated 15% federal funding decrease minimum. So And this is something, you know, like I said, I'm a staunch, diehard, constitutional, fiscal conservative. I love and support my president, but at the same time, when they're already short on money, mm-hmm. and you want to short them some more, that's a tough call for me.
That $12 billion proposed cut nationwide would affect Arizona. $144 million of federal education funds would be eliminated from our state.
And we're already short.
We're already short. And we already know that, back to the question about the empowerment scholarship accounts, $124 million, unchecked, unchallenged, have already been spent on the ESA receipts that are under $2,000.
What can you do about that?
Well, we would not be auto-approving unchecked and unchallenged. We would not just auto-approve. We would make sure that those resources really are spent on educational needs.
Is there an office that oversees that?
Yes, there is.
And what is their accountability?
Well, the current superintendent says we don't have enough people to oversee, so we're just going to automatically approve. There's always a solution. We can find a technology solution.
Will you find
this.
The solution?
I will, absolutely. I ran a large institution.
There
I know how to find solutions.
Well, you've got another one here that says, is there not a certain percentage reeler from the state line trust every year?
What was that question? A
percentage?
A certain percentage reeler. I don't know what that question is. That's a great question, and I don't have the answer to it, but see, this is the teacher in me. I'm going to research it and find out. I believe this is a conversation with the state treasurer and the state superintendent. How can we work together to make sure that if there's available funds to be released, that we're releasing them and we're getting them to the schools? How can we make sure that Arizona is going to prioritize public education for the 1 million kids across Arizona?
Well, we appreciate that, and I believe we're going on our last break of the day. And we'll catch you back here shortly on Common Ground, KNTR 106.75 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
American history and practical man. You study him hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone.
No education. We don't need no.
Welcome back to Common Ground, right here live on 106.75 and 3, Voice of the Free. I'm here with Scott Goodman and Dr. Terry Ruiz. Welcome back to the show. All right.
Welcome back to you, too.
We were, during the break, I had mentioned that I have a friend that's running for governor in Oregon. And she was, her name's Danielle Bethel. She was a school superintendent and is now a county what you call a county supervisor, we call them county commissioners up there. And while during this meeting, while I was introducing her to the Teamsters to get this endorsement, we were talking about such education in Oregon and how inappropriate it is. Didn't you say that they don't have that anymore here in Lake Havasu?
They've eliminated
that
it.
That is correct. So my freshman, they usually taught it like kind of squeezed into PE, but I believe my freshman year was the last to have it.
So to our listeners that may not know, Marissa went through the school system here in Lake Havasu pretty recently, 2022,
so,
right?
Yep, 2022.
So I'm a believer, personally speaking, I'm a believer that sex education should be conducted by the parents in the home to tell their kids what they feel are comfortable with. There's nobody's going to ever agree as a group what's the appropriate way of handling sex education. There's differing opinions across the board. There's politically aspect-oriented decisions. There's conservative, Democrat. There's too much. I think it should be up to the individual parents. That's why in many sex education classes and district, the parents have to sign off on it.
Mm-hmm. Right. They do, in Oregon, they do, they do offer you the option to opt out of that program.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about the fact that we have a wonderful guest here who's very knowledgeable at what she's doing and running for office for a noble reason. And I want to talk about the common ground. You have a, if you win, you have a monumental task ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And I envy you for making the, hopefully making the attempt to do this. But with the budgets as short as they are and the staffing shortage that you have, there's just not a lot of opportunity for to make a mistake, and they're going to be made because of the lack of time and the lack of infrastructure mm-hmm. to support and to monitor A perfect example, of course, is the vouchers. They just rubber stamp everything because they don't have the staffing to oversee. So that being said, the common ground I believe we can have is on in these subjects here is the fact that we want a good education for our children.
Absolutely.
And we want money to be spent properly and not wasted.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want oversight, and we also need diligent oversight.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully with good oversight, you can find money that was being, being pissed away unnecessarily, that could be reallocated to areas of importance to the kids and to foster a better environment for them. And as we discussed earlier, the education and the communication between the infrastructure of the superintendent's office, the school districts, et cetera, we need them. We really need them. And I appreciate you coming on board.
Thank you so much for coming.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank
you
for having
me. And once again, who are you and what are you running for?
My name is Dr. Terry Leyba Ruiz, and I am running to be the next state superintendent of public instruction to oversee education across Arizona for the 1 million kids in public education.
Well, thank you.
Very important job.
We'll be catching you next Tuesday, everybody. Thank you for listening. And Common Ground, 106.7, 5 and 3.
Voice of the Free.
See you at 9 o'clock
next
Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Eating the dogs. They're eating the cats. Eat the cat. Eat the cat. They're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats. Eat the cat. Eat the cat.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.